listening to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER with your host, Joel Kassam.
Hello and welcome to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER 107.3. Joel Kassam is my name. I hope you're doing very well and thank you for joining me this week. If you're new to the show, this is where I invite a special guest into the studio and they take the musical reins by playing four of their favourite songs. Alright, let's find out who we've got this week. My guest today has over 15 years' experience in Aboriginal and Historic Cultural Heritage, who also sits on the National Parks and Wildlife Service Advisory Council, a seasonal lecturer in heritage planning at the University of New South Wales, and with three educational books to her name, it's CEO of GML Heritage, Sharon Veal. Welcome, Sharon.
Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for coming in today.
Pleasure.
Where did you grow up? Are you from Sydney originally?
No, I grew up in the Adelaide Hills in South Australia, a place called Mount Barker. And I moved to Sydney about 26 years ago.
Oh, okay. And why the move?
Well, I moved up here because my then partner and I went overseas and we moved back from overseas to Adelaide and it felt like a country town. And a lot of the people that we were at school with and had started university with had moved to Melbourne or Sydney, and my then partner was studying architecture up here and I was studying fine arts, and I came up here to do honours and he came up here to UDS to finish his architecture degree.
So you're studying arts, did you say?
Yeah, fine arts.
Okay, how did you get into what you do now then?
Good question. I really loved, I studied art history and theory at the Power Institute at Sydney University. And I was really not only interested in art practice, but I was interested in the cultural production of art. And I was also interested in cities and urbanism. So I also wanted to work in museums, and a friend of mine suggested that I do an applied degree here, which was the Masters of Applied History at UTS. And that was the beginning of, I suppose, the next chapter in my career, because it combined not only my love of public history, but art practice, because one of my first jobs was recording sculptures for the City of Sydney in their outdoor museum. So it combined both my love of sculpture and art practice in the urban environment.
And then it sort of grew from there and you sort of got into what you're doing now?
Yeah, I really initially was focused on buildings and architecture. I worked at the Institute of Architects for several years, looking after their register of significant 20th century buildings. And at the same time, I had another job at UNSW, working as a research assistant in the Faculty of the Built Environment with the now professor there, Rob Freestone. And I was working on a large Australian Research Council funded project about the City Beautiful movement. And we were looking at how the City Beautiful movement was not only expressed in the US, but how those influences moved to Australia and were expressed in Australian cities.
Okay, we do have to get into your music. Your first song is your old song. What have you gone with?
I've gone with Vic Sims.
Now, why have you chosen this song?
Because it's a great story and a great song. Vic Sims is a Bidjigal man. He grew up at La Perouse and he became a pop star. And this is a song that was recorded off his first album, which was recorded in 1973, called The Loner. And it's really about him being an Aboriginal man, his relationship with country, and how Aboriginal people, I suppose, had to learn to adapt and respond and be resilient in a very changed context.
So this is Vic Sims with Stranger in My Country.
Stranger in my country, stranger in my land, due date is somewhere, no account, tomorrow's something grand. I doubt if you'd agree with me, or if you'd understand. Till that day, for guys like me, I'm a stranger in my land. Well, forgive me if it seems as though, but I am not mistaken. 'Cause I'm the one who you forgot after my land was taken. In early years we were put down, cast aside as vermin. Women, men and kids shot down, then paid by Bible sermon. Well, don't try to understand me now, I've seen the sights that pain you. Has it really changed for me since round up in Tasmania? I'm a stranger in my country, stranger in my land. Today to somewhere, no account, tomorrow something grand. I doubt if you'd agree with me, or if you'd understand. Till that day, for guys like me, I'm a stranger in my land. Black is beautiful, I've heard it far and wide, man. Are you sincere in what you say? If not, please step aside then. This land is like a store-bought pie, and lots of people come all to get themselves a slice, and I can't get a crumb. Well, the black Australian has his pride, his culture and his dream time. Easy to lose all this as well, I wonder in the meantime. I'm a stranger in my country, stranger in my land. Today to somewhere, no account, tomorrow something grand. I doubt if you'd agree with me, if you'd understand. Till that day, for guys like me, I'm a stranger in my land. 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 I'm a stranger in my land.
A very powerful track there, Stranger in My Country. That was Vic Sims. My guest today is Sharon Veal. Now, Aboriginal heritage is such a valuable part of this country. Are there places around Sydney we can go visit that are heritage listed?
There are, Joel. Increasing numbers of places are listed for their Aboriginal values. There's certainly a range of rock art around Sydney Harbour and the coastline. But even perhaps more surprising than that, places within the urban environment that we may not necessarily on first blush think have Aboriginal values.
Yeah, okay.
So a good example of that is the Cypress Helene Club, which is a building on Elizabeth Street in the city just facing Hyde Park. And actually that it looks like a historic building from the outside, but it's what happened on the inside that's really important. So in 1938, a group of Aboriginal people got together and held a day of mourning, essentially, protesting for civil and political rights, rights to land. And it was really a coming together of Aboriginal people across Australia to voice their continuing concerns about their treatment in Australia. And that hall within the Cypress Helene Club was actually the place where Aboriginal people met and wrote a petition to the government. So really profoundly important to Aboriginal
people.
Absolutely.
Do you have any particular favourite places around Sydney that you you love that have that Aboriginal historic presence and value?
Yeah, I love La Perouse, actually, because of the continuing connection expressed there by Aboriginal people. Not to say that other places aren't important in that regard too, but I think Aboriginal people and the stories associated with La Perouse are really profoundly important. And I've spent a lot of time working with National Parks and Wildlife at Kamay Botany Bay National Park, and I think there's a really poignant symbolism expressed through not only La Perouse but Botany Bay and Kurnell around Aboriginal people's continuing connection to country, their living history and culture, and just their resilience and tolerance and patience in terms of getting their rights and interests recognised as part of the unique fabric and identity of Australian history.
Well, that's the thing. It's not just Sydney, is it? It's all of Australia. Are there other places around the country that you take care of as well?
Well, I'm fortunate in my job in that I get to work on places that have a lot of significance to Aboriginal people. And more recently, I've been working on a couple of places that are really important to Aboriginal women, which resonates very strongly with me, because a lot of the time I find in some of the community consultations that I do that women don't tend to put themselves forward. So to be able to support and facilitate Aboriginal women in speaking about places that are important to them is really, really rewarding, and you learn so much from them. And one of the places that I worked on recently was an Aboriginal women's site in Cowga that is now listed as an Aboriginal place, and it's been saved from sand quarrying.
Oh, excellent. That's great news. Sharon Veal is my guest today, and she's picking the music. Sharon, what is your new song?
My new song is Skeleton Tree by Nick Cave.
And why have you chosen this song?
Oh, well, Nick Cave and his music's been a part of my life for all of my adult years, at least. And when when this album came out, I thought it was quite profound in that it was sometime after the death of one of his children, and I just thought the sparse, raw emotion and beauty in this song resonated.
Brilliant. This is Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds with Skeleton Tree.
Sunday morning, skeleton tree. Oh, nothing is for free. In the window, a candle. Well, maybe you can see falling leaves thrown across the sky, a jittery TV. Glowing white like fire, nothing is for free. country, pressed against the sky. The jittery TV glowing white like fire.
Their 16th studio album, Skeleton Tree. That was, of course, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds with the title track, Skeleton Tree. So how much of Sydney is actually heritage listed?
Oh, there's not a lot that's heritage listed, surprisingly enough, Joel. There's about 1,600 places listed on the State Heritage Register. So they're the places that are deemed to have significance for all of the state. And then there's several thousand places listed on local registers, and then just a couple of handfuls of places listed on the National Heritage List that are in New South Wales, and then an even smaller percentage that are listed on the World Heritage List of Outstanding Universal Value. So,
So how does something or somewhere become heritage listed? What's the process? What's involved?
Well, it's a formal bureaucratic process, and individuals or communities or groups can nominate places to registers. Certainly, anybody can make a nomination to the State Heritage Register. Whether it gets listed or not is another question, because there is a formal administrative process and an investigative research process that goes on in the Heritage Division, which is the government's administration for heritage, and they will look at your nomination and work out whether it does in fact meet the threshold for significance and listing.
How often are places being put out there to have a heritage listing?
Quite frequently, actually. Certainly there's a regular number of places that will come up for consideration for listing. I mean, most recently, the most controversial decision not to list a place has been the Sirius Building in Millers Point, The Rocks. Mm-hmm. And that was a very contentious decision. Ultimately, the minister makes the decision whether a place gets listed on the State Heritage Register or not. And in this instance, the minister decided not to do it, which was against the advice of the Heritage Council.
Okay, well, there you go. Do you take interest in overseas heritage as well? Have you been involved in anything overseas?
Yes, I have. I spent many years working on a project at Angkor in Cambodia. We were fortunate enough to be consultants to a project which prepared a heritage management framework for Angkor Wat, which is listed on the World Heritage List. Right. And that was really a wonderful project, because one of the key elements of that project was working with local people to enable them and support them in benefiting from cultural heritage through tourism and other work in conserving places within the Angkor World Heritage Area.
That's very cool. We have to play your borrowed song now. What have you gone with?
Until the Sun Needs to Rise by Rufus.
Now, why have you chosen this one?
I have two teenage daughters, one of whom is an avid music festival goer, and she introduced me to this song.
Okay, great.
coming with me. No, I gotta make a move. Sleeping by the freeways, looking for the thing I choose.
Sydney boys, Rufus the Soul there with Until the Sun Needs to Rise off their album Bloom. If you're just tuning in, you're on 2SER and this is Old New Borrowed Blue, where I'm joined by Sharon Veal. Sharon, you are, of course you already know this, the CEO of GML Heritage. How are you finding this role?
Well, it's challenging, but it's really rewarding and interesting. I really enjoy the people that I work with, and we get to do some really great projects.
Now, did you also win a leadership award last year?
I did, actually, Joel. Yes, I was very surprised, actually, and I went along to the Consult Australia award ceremony, which was a gala dinner, and all of the nominees were flashed up onto the screen with photographs, and there was my photograph up there, and then they announced my name, and my face was up on the screen, and I had to be prodded by the person next to me to go up and receive the award. But it was a great honour and a real surprise.
That's great. Congratulations. Let's talk about the three educational books you've written: Remembering Country, Talking History, and Aboriginal Women's Heritage. What can you tell us about these?
Well, on the Aboriginal Women's Heritage books, I was just somebody that supported that project, but that really was about recording Aboriginal women's stories across regional and rural areas in New South Wales, and helping the broader population understand and appreciate and enjoy Aboriginal women's lives. Talking History was trying to help National Parks and Wildlife Services, rangers and field officers and others to record history, as well as Aboriginal people in communities that we'd been working with wanting to record stories of elders. And so we wrote a guideline publication which was called Talking History to enable a range of people to understand the sort of basics or the fundamentals of oral history recording. And then the other book that you mentioned, Remembering Country, was a project which was about a new national park, or then new national park, in the Upper Hunter of New South Wales called Tawari National Park. And that included oral histories with Aboriginal people, but a lot of historical archival research. And what we tried to do in that book was to connect people's stories to place, to really, I suppose, bring that landscape to life through personal journeys and experiences across land through time.
Sharon Veal, it's been a pleasure having you in today. Thank you so much for dropping by. You do fantastic work. And now you get to take us out with your blues song. What have you gone with?
Yeah, so on the landscape theme, my final song is Wide Open Road by Australian band The Triffids.
And why did you choose this one?
Well, because I have spent quite a bit of time in my life on the road, driving back and forth from Sydney to Adelaide, and Wide Open Road is really about the Triffids' journey across the Nullarbor from Perth, and my journey to Adelaide was really across the Hay Plains, which is a wide open road, and I just think that the Australian landscape is open, is wide, and this evokes all of those memories.
Thank you very much, Sharon.